Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dark Fire by Ruby Dixon, narrated by Jair Bush and Jeremy York. Part 1. Chapter 1. Melina.
"I think you're free to go," I say cheerfully to my last remaining patient in my clinic. There's no relief quite like when a sick patient can walk out on his own 2 feet. I smile at the stranger, pleased that he's recovered some weight and he's feeling better. It makes me feel like I've done my job, like I'm making a change in the after. It's a good feeling, even if it's the prickly, odd man they call Azar. I pick up my knitting in the ugly, ugly yarn, just so I have something to keep my hands busy as Azar puts on his many clothes. Even though it's the dead of summer and everything is stagnant and hot, he insists on wearing layer after layer of clothing. His skin is the whitest I've ever seen, and his hair, too. If it weren't for the strange gold of his eyes, I think he has a recessive gene or two in there that's mutated. As it is, I'm not entirely sure that he's human, but I'm not going to ask questions. My job is to fix him up and send him on his way. He puts on a long coat over his long-sleeved shirt and equally long pants, and then braids his long hair and loops it under his baseball cap.
"Will these clothes suffice?" he asks, turning toward me. "Would a normal human wear them?"
That's a weird way to put it. Puzzled, I finish the stitch I'm on and set my needles down. "What do you mean?"
"Are they too burned to make me seem normal?"
Azar's voice is polite as he stands in front of me, layered despite the fact that it's over 100 degrees today. I don't get it, but I know from tending to him over the last few weeks that he runs hot, like he's constantly got a fever that I can't cure. I threw away 3 precious thermometers before I realized the problem wasn't them, but him. I'm still worried he's got some sort of cancer making his system go haywire, but if that's the case, I can't do anything for him anyhow. So I study his clothing. They still have some burned edges, but I think they're usable. Everyone uses clothing until it rots off your back at this point, I say. They're not exactly a commodity that can be easily replaced. So, yeah, keep wearing them. He gazes down at me.
Is that why you are dressed the way you are? Because you lack proper clothing?
After weeks of dealing with Azar and his strange pointed questions, I don't get offended. I'm not sure if it was his injuries or if it's the after that makes him a little peculiar, but we're all a little weird at this point. So I just chuckle and deflect. Much as I would love to swan about in fancy dresses and loads of jewelry, I'm just glad to have clean clothes. I pat the militia uniform I'm wearing. It's ugly and bulky and fits wrong across my backside, but it's clothing. Most of my meager funds go towards bartering for more medical supplies. That's why I'm knitting in my spare time. Those odd golden eyes flick to the needles and yarn in my hand.
You are making fancy dresses?
In a way, he reminds me a bit of Commander Data from that old space show, creepy white skin and all. No, I say carefully. I'm making scarves for the winter and extra diapers for the moms that come in. I can trade my knitted items for clothes when I need to.
But you would wear fancy dresses as your preference if you could.
I shrug. Who wouldn't? I'm weak for pretty clothes, just like any woman. Azar nods thoughtfully, as if filing this information away. He stares at me for so long that my skin prickles uncomfortably. I ignore it. As a woman alone in the after, you learn to try to ignore a lot of what men do. It's like an apocalypse has given them leave to be shitty assholes constantly. Azar can be short and nasty with others, but he's usually polite to me. I sincerely hope that doesn't change. He still keeps staring, though. I look up from my knitting again. What?
You're the healer here, are you not?
He pulls up a seat across from me, wincing only slightly as he sits down. I know his skin is tight in certain spots and tender where he was burned,
I also know it healed faster than any human should have possibly healed from those kinds of wounds, but dragons in the sky. Dragons in the sky negate all logical arguments. He gestures at my empty clinic.
Why are your people not protecting such a valued commodity?
Here we go. It's another version of, hey, pretty lady, you look like you're all alone and in need of a sugar daddy. I turn back to my knitting. If this is you trying to get the courage up to rape me, know that I will castrate you in your sleep. He laughs, the sound hard and sharp.
I am merely assessing this place, learning what I need to in order to take it over.
Sure you are. I flick my needles again, determined to ignore him. Unless you're going to pay me for my services, it's time for me to send you on your way. My clinic can't afford to support freeloaders. It was nice to meet you, Azar. I hope you have a lovely life. I really do.
That's all I get? After weeks of time spent together?
His words are accusing. Yep. I've learned the hard way that when men get possessive, it's best to just neutralize them. I ignore him, my expression calm. You're a patient. I'm a healer. I healed you, now you're no longer my patient. So the circle of life goes.
But your clinic, is it poor?
There's a calculating note in his voice. I glance up at him and notice that he's leaning in toward me. In any other man, it would be menacing and pushy. But I've wiped this man's ass for weeks now when he couldn't take care of himself. He's still weak as a kitten. He just isn't good with boundaries. So I lean in, irritated, and practically get in his face. Listen, I don't care if you think my clinic is poor. This is the best clinic in the state. Hell, it might be the only clinic left in the state. So you take what you can get and you say, thank you, Melina, and you go on your way, all right? He grins at me. It's not a comfortable grin, just like the hand he strokes over his chin comes across as somewhat menacing instead of contemplative.
Thank you, Melina, he parrots. And I'm not trying to offend you. I'm trying to figure out your price.
My jaw clenches. I'm not sucking your dick, no matter what you offer. Really, the fucking nerve of this white man.
You misunderstand me, Azar says softly, continuing to stroke his too pale chin with his too pale fingers.
His fingernails are just as unnatural as the rest of him, shorn short and blunted and thick as horse hooves.
I am going to walk the city when I leave here.
Good for you, buddy, I say slyly back to him, not backing away an inch.
And I am going to determine the easiest way to take it, he says, all confidence. A week from now, this will be my fort, my people. They will bow to me.
It takes everything I have not to roll my eyes. Sounds like a fever dream to me.
Perhaps.
His strange eyes glitter.
But when the city is mine, I will need a consort.
Is that what this was leading to? He wants a woman at his side. Tempting, but no. Azar gestures at my clinic.
What if I stocked this full of everything you needed? What if I gave you beautiful clothes and jewelry? Would you come willingly to my bed?
Still, no.
Name your price, then.
This man is pissing me off. I glare at him, no longer playing around. It's hard enough to live in the after, doubly hard when you're a black woman. Men don't like to take no for an answer, but I can handle myself. There's a knife close nearby, and I won't hesitate to use it if he doesn't fuck off with this. I don't know who gave you the impression that I'm for sale. I'm not. So quit asking, because the answer will always be no. And if you try anything, I will fucking castrate you.
His lip curls. I do not need to rape. My consort must be willing. She will show the people here that I am one of them. She will cement my place as lord of this hovel.
He flicks a hand in the air, indicating the city.
I have been in your world for a while now, and I have decided that it's better to reign over garbage than to not reign at all. He gets to his feet. So tell me your price.
Fuck you, I say, positioning my knitting needles into a weapon and pointing them at him. I'm not for sale.
The smile he gives me is cold and ruthless. Everyone is for sale. We simply haven't figured out your price yet, my consort.
A week later, Azar attacks the city with 6 dragons at his command. I'd forgotten all about his crazy rambling. I've heard so much nonsense from people over the years, people that can no longer get their mental health medications, or people that have had their minds snapped by the rift, or everything after it. We're all a little bit mad these days. So, when a weak, newly healed man talks about how he's going to take the fort, I dismiss it as nonsense. I'm not laughing when the dragons fill the skies and the alarms fill the air of the city. It's the wrong day for dragons, and that worries me a little. I have the attacks, which always follow a pattern, marked on an old calendar and plan my days around them, as everyone in Fort Dallas does. We know when the alarms sound that it's time to take cover. In the end, it doesn't matter that it's the wrong day. The moment the alarms blare over the fort, I spring into action. I shut the doors of the clinic to protect my precious medications and equipment from dragon fire. I don't lock the doors because dragons can't use doors anyhow, and someone else might need shelter. Once they're secured, I hide inside a metal filing cabinet that will protect me from the worst of the flames, a blanket covering my shoulders and head. I huddle inside, and I wait. I wait for the smell of burning things, the screams, and the inevitable knowledge that my clinic will be filled to overflowing once more, and I won't be able to save everyone or ease their pain. To distract myself, I go over my supplies mentally. My bandages and gauze stockpile are low, but I boiled some rags and tore them into strips and saved them in a plastic bag, so they should be more or less sterile. My aloe vera supplies are low, as are my ibuprofen and naproxen. The best I'm going to be able to do is to put cool water in bowls or buckets and have people dunk the affected limbs to ease the burning. If someone comes in burned beyond saving, well, I've got a medication for that, too. I'm so busy with my mental plans that I don't notice all is quiet until the door to the clinic opens. Going still, I edge one door of the cabinet open and peer out. It's Azar, looking healthier than when he left. In a way, I'm surprised and not surprised at the same time. He's a stranger that comes out of nowhere with the same odd pure gold eyes like Claudia's dragon maid, Kyle. He pretends to be human, but to see him commanding a fleet of dragons? Everything clicks. I realize this as he swaggers into my clinic like he owns it, wearing a long, flowing coat made of pale leather. He's got a baseball cap over his head, but there's something about the lack of fear in his stance that cements things. Azar isn't human. He's been pretending to be, and I've been ignoring the signs. The dragons attacking, he's responsible somehow. Hate blooms in my heart as he moves toward the small desk where I keep my patient records in an old notebook. He picks it up and flicks through it, leaning against my desk.
I know you're in here, my pet. I can smell you.
Gritting my jaw, I step out of the cabinet and stand straight and tall, glaring at him. You're not human, are you? He runs his hand down one page, touching my handwriting.
I am not. I was wondering how long it would take for you to notice. It seems that humans see what they want to see, rather than what's before their eyes.
He smirks at me and closes my patient log, tossing it down on the table.
You are as lovely as ever. Did you miss me?
No, I bite out. Did you bring those dragons here? Azar nods.
They're mine. I control them.
Are you here to destroy everyone? I mentally imagine the chaos he's going to cause,
My clinic isn't big enough, and I don't have the supplies. Oh, God, this is going to be brutal.
Is that how you repay those that took you in and nursed you back to health?
His mouth curls, hard and brittle.
Is that what you think? That I was completely helpless until you came and put your soft hands and rubbed your ointments onto my skin? That if you fed me your dreadful food, and your fort's food is dreadful, by the way, that I'd come to have gratitude for this place?
He laughs.
If anything, it's convinced me of the correctness of my actions more than ever.
Actions? The smile he gives me is as cold as it is wide.
This place needs a ruler. I intend to take it over.
What? I'm stunned into silence. Fort Dallas has gone through a bit of trouble recently, given that when Claudia mated with a dragon, he ended up eating the last mayor. There's been some jockeying with the militia that runs things as they try to figure out who should take his place. I steer clear of all of it because I know whoever is in charge, he's going to be a power-hungry ass. They all are. Each time leadership changes, I have to establish guidelines for running my clinic all over again. As if anyone's lining up to run a clinic other than me. Someone needs to look after the sick, though. I eye Azar as he smirks at me.
You think you're the man for the job, huh?
As you pointed out, I am not a man.
He takes off the baseball cap that hides his hair, shaking it out and revealing the tangled, pale length of it.
But yes, I am a leader, and the people here desperately need to be led.
You're a stranger. No one wants you in charge. Forts are extremely xenophobic in the after, and they hate outsiders. Not that this is a good argument for someone who intends to take over, but I feel I should say something.
I'm not going to ask,
Azar comments, his voice silky as he regards me.
When you see a patient unconscious and bleeding, do you ask them if it's all right if you tend to them, or do you simply get to work?
It's not the same thing.
Isn't it?
He spreads a hand, gesturing at the ramshackle city.
I see people in desperate need of guidance when I look around. They will be grateful to have me.
My jaw clenches, and I shake my head again. I take a step backward, reaching for one of the scalpels near my surgery tray. Why are you here in my clinic? Did you come here to brag? Because I'm not interested. Azar frowns, as if he's not quite grasping why I'm frustrated with him.
Why? I told you, I am conquering this place, and I've come to offer you the position of my consort.
He's dreaming. I let my disbelief show on my face. Fuck off!
Is that a no?
It's a never. His smile grows thin, cunning.
That's a word you shouldn't use, my pet. Everyone has a price, and never is such a long, long time.
I shake my head. There are better-looking women in town. Go find yourself someone that's willing.
But you are the one that I want.
He gestures at me, his hand long and elegant.
I will be a benevolent mate to you.
Wait and see.
This man does not get the hint. I put a hand at my hip, careful to flash the scalpel at him. I have had enough of benevolent men to last me a lifetime, thank you. I want nothing to do with you or your plans. What I want is for you to get out of my damn clinic. Azar just smiles at me as if I'm not speaking.
I can be patient. Wait and see.
He turns and leaves, and I'm weak with relief. I crawl back into the cabinet and hide, waiting for the dragons to leave and shivering with terror. Men demanding my body isn't something new. It happens to every woman in the after. Most just want to taste something they're not allowed to have, and if my knife doesn't scare them away, my indifference usually does. I've killed a man that wouldn't take no for an answer, and I'll do it again if I have to. But something about Azar chills me. I suspect he's not told no very often,
and I'm sure he's not going to take it as an answer. Everything changes in Fort Dallas after Azar returns. I hide for hours, but when the dragon alarms finally shut down, a quick peek out the door shows me that there's a dragon seated atop the junked car barricade that surrounds Fort Dallas. Alarmed, I shut my door again and hide out for the rest of the night. The next morning, I awaken to knocking on the door of the clinic. It's the militia, wearing their camouflage uniforms, though I don't recognize the soldiers. They tell me that a new leader has stepped in at Fort Dallas, and for the safety of all people, everyone is to remain inside their houses for the day.
"If you have problems, you can take it up with the new leader, Lord Azar," the soldier tells me.
So he took over after all, and no one has come to my clinic, so either it was painless or there's no one left alive. "I'm good, thanks," I tell them, and shut the doors tightly again. I don't trust the militia either. I spend the day with a single metal shutter up to look out on the town, drinking the last of my water and sweating in the oppressive heat. I see more dragons on the barricade around the city, but the only ones walking the streets are the militia themselves, rifles in hand. I could open more windows to let in a breeze, but the dragons so close by have me unnerved. They've been calm atop the barricade, but they've also never been so close to the city. I can practically see the individual scales gleaming on each dragon's hide, and it's terrifying. If they attack from this close, we'll all be roasted alive in our homes. I sleep on one of the cots like I always do, and when I wake up the next morning, the all-clear alarm, 3 short bursts, is blaring. That means everyone is safe and we can go out of the buildings again. I eye my calendar. Today is a dragon attack day. That means this morning, a red dragon is going to fly overhead, flame everything and attack, and then fly away again just as quickly. But the all clear sounds again, and I frown to myself. Is Azar trying to get everyone in this fort killed? We know the patterns here better than he does. I move to the window, fix the shutters shut again, and wait. By the time the sun is high in the sky and the sweltering day feels like it's roasting Fort Dallas, I peek out the door. The dragons are still atop the barricade, wings folded, calm. There was no attack this morning. As I glance outside, I see a few other people sticking their heads out and looking around. A young Hispanic boy who doesn't look old enough to drive has a militia uniform on, and his rifle is slung over his shoulder. I wave him over, and he approaches. It's Antonio, from 2 streets over. His mother runs the soup kitchen that feeds the militia, and last year she had a badly infected finger that I fixed up for her. I give him a friendly smile and wipe some of the sweat from my brow.
"When did you join up?"
He grins at me, adjusting his military-issued cap.
"Lord Azar invited all men willing to follow him to join."
Did he now?
"How'd he take control?" I ask, making my tone curious instead of bitter. "What happened?"
"Nothing," Antonio tells me. "He showed up and said he had dragons, and if we wanted to be safe, we could follow him."
He shrugs.
"He just stepped in and took over. No one argued at all."
I eye the mass of dragons perched above the ruins of the city like the world's biggest gargoyles. Kinda hard to argue with someone if they brought a bunch of dragons with them.
"What do you mean he has them? Why aren't they attacking?"
Antonio grins.
"Lord Azar controls them, says they can't do anything without his permission."
"Like pets?"
The boy shrugs again. "He says we won't have any dragon attacks while they're here protecting us. Nomads, either. We're now the safest fort out there."
He straightens, clearly pleased with this.
"Fort Dallas is going to be different now."
"I see it is," I say. "Tell your mama I said hello." I lift my chin at him. "And spread the word I'm still here. If anyone's injured or hurt, I'll take care of them. Doesn't matter who's in charge." Antonio nods.
Azar told us to take special care of you. At my incredulous look, he continues, you're his lady. We're to make sure you're protected first and everyone else second. That fucking man. I smile tightly at Antonio and start opening my clinic's windows to let a breeze in. The next morning, when I peek out of the clinic, there are soldiers stationed in front of my doors. Hot fury flashes inside of me at the sight. I bite back my anger and approach the closest one. I don't like the law. I especially don't like the law because it tends to be nothing but men with big egos who like to brandish their guns. To see them stationed outside of my clinic feels like a personal violation. Not only do I feel watched, but no one's going to come to the clinic if they feel they have to pass through a gauntlet of soldiers. Is there a problem? I ask, keeping my tone sweet. He nods at me, all mocking respect.
Lord Azar sent us to watch over his lady, that's all.
He smirks at me.
He wants to make sure you're safe.
The smirk on his face tells me exactly what he thinks I'm doing with Lord Azar. It enrages me, but I force myself to ignore it. Railing against the person in power will get me nowhere. I have two choices. I can ignore Azar's commands. I can confront Azar. There's a third choice. I can leave the fort behind entirely, but then the people here will be abandoned and without medical aid. If anyone else knows how to tend to basic medical needs or step in as a midwife here in Fort Dallas, they sure haven't volunteered their services. I feel obligated to stay, and that means ignoring the soldiers at my door. So I give them a quick once-over and add, at least put away your guns so you don't scare anyone. They just give me knowing looks, undressing me with their eyes. It doesn't matter that I'm wearing old, patched clothing and my hair is so dry and screaming for moisture that I could probably use my braid to sweep the floor like a broom. To them, I'm a woman trading herself to the lord of this place. Ugh! I shut the door to the clinic once more and try not to think about those jerks. I'm not entirely surprised when no one comes to the clinic this day. I wouldn't either. The day after the soldiers show up at my door, there's no scheduled dragon attack again. I dare to peek out my window, lifting the metal shutter, and I notice others are doing the same. There's wonder and relief on their faces, and I know we're all thinking the same thing. Did Azar really chase the wild dragons away? Are the ones sitting on the wall his tamed pets? Despite the presence of the soldiers at my doorstep, my clinic gets a few visitors. There's the usual check-ins from the women that work at the whorehouse near the barracks, looking for birth control, and I get a few others. One is a pregnant woman wanting to hear her baby's heartbeat, and another is a man that cut his finger while repairing his roof. Everyone speaks of Azar in glowing terms, that he is really here to protect the people of the fort, that he's here to save us. I don't correct them. Let them think whatever helps them sleep at night. I'm just about to shut my doors for the day, tidying up the clinic, when one of the guards pushes in a grocery cart full of jars and boxes. I jump to my feet, frowning. What's this?
A present from Lord Azar to his consort, the smirky militia guard, the same one from yesterday, tells me. He wants to make sure you're eating well.
He takes the lid off of one box and shows a variety of fresh pastries and a loaf of cornbread, then sets them on the nearest table without asking. He picks up a weathered-looking thermos and holds it out to me.
Soup of the day.
I ignore the watering of my mouth and draw myself up, tall as I can. I didn't ask for handouts. My customers pay me enough to get by. They don't, actually. I ask them to pay what they can, and most can't. I live off of the rare patron that brings in a dead deer and makes jerky out of it, or the things that I manage to knit. I'm always hungry, and God, this food looks and smells amazing. But if I take it, what message does that send? So I carefully close the plastic box full of bread. How the hell did he even get bread? And hold it back out to the guard. You can take this all away. I don't want it.
Our orders are to leave it, Lady Melina.
Lady Melina? My eyebrows go up. Am I the lady to his lord? Even
sample complete. Ready to continue?